Indoctrination. Written by Croic. Read by Opal Song. Fandom Bloodborne. Rating explicit. Relationship Edgar Abreitas. Also tagged for religious cults and tentacles. It all began with Master Willem, headmaster of Bergenworth. Yuri opened the doors to Odin Chapel, and Edgar followed eagerly in her footsteps. A handful of parishioners glanced up at their entry, and Edgar was sure to stand tall and straight so that he would not disparage his ladyship by association. She was, after all, a shining beacon that morning. Dressed in her choir whites, the robes flowing luxuriously around her poised frame. By comparison, he in his hunter blacks was rather drab. He tried to make up for his rank through sheer composure, though he was unclear as to his success. He was the wisest and cleverest man of his age, and we will never see his like again, Yuri continued to sermonize, and Edgar drew his focus back to catch every word as they moved through the small chapel. He is lost to us now, deep within what we now call the Forbidden Woods, but his keen intellect and courage remain with us to this day, and we cherish it dearly. Edgar nodded, though the secrets of the church were well hidden even to those among its members, such as he. Even the lowest ranking was familiar with the grandiosity of the late Master Willem. What happened to him? That is not for you to know, Yuri continued without turning. How she could see and maneuver the space from within her blindfold cap, Edgar had no idea, but she moved with effortless grace to a small door in the chapel's eastern wall. A small key produced from her sleeve gained them entry, and with curious looks from the parishioners, they slipped inside. Once Edgar was through the door, Yuri took a moment to lock it behind him. But he passed on his legacy to his dearest student. Yuri resumed as she led her new acolyte through the corridors of stone. Do you know who that was? First Vicar Lawrence, Edgar answered at once. He had spent much of the night before refreshing himself on all his boyhood studies when first preparing to join the church. He would not fail a test of memory. Of that he was certain. Very good, said Yuri, and Edgar felt his chest swell with the compliment. Yes, indeed, it was Vicar Lawrence, a brilliant scholar and visionary. She led them down the short hall towards the stone lift at its end. It was in his youth that he and a select few from Bergenworth ventured deep into the catacombs beneath Yharnam and brought back holy treasures, indescribable in nature, wonders beyond our imagination that we have yet to fully comprehend. And chief among them was the Old Blood. The Old Blood, Edgar repeated, and a shudder of reverence passed through him as they stepped onto the round stone dais. Yuri engaged the lift, and the chains clanked and whirred as Yharnam's advanced mechanics spirited them into the upper environs of the cathedral ward. Edgar had never traveled to such heights within the city, and he found his gaze straying to the open windows as they swept past, and the early morning light caught in the ward's many tall spires. Then Yuri was speaking again, and he drew his senses back to listen. Bergenworth had, for many years, already known the secret holy properties of blood, the life that resides in all of us, said Yuri, and she rubbed absently at the inside of her forearm, as if remembering the prick of a needle. And with this new blood, blessed by the heavens itself, they were granted truth and salvation beyond measure. Through their rigorous experiments, they discovered that the blood received from the tomb contained vast restorative and curative properties, unlike any balm or medicine that has been concocted by men. Her voice grew wistful, almost dreamlike. Those blessed with its ingestion had their illnesses cured, their disabilities reversed, the very blindness lifted from their eyes, and all rejoiced. The lift jerked to a halt. Edgar had to brace himself, but Yuri was sure-footed and did not stir. Her robes gave a pleasant bob as she stepped off the lift, and Edgar matched her gait closely. There were those that preached over caution, said Yuri, though offhandedly, as if instructing in her manners that Edgar was not meant to offer any questions on the subject. They were frightened of this power, this great boon that the gods had given us, which is why it took Lawrence of the most supreme courage to bring it to the light of day. He spirited away his findings from the college and founded our blessed healing church. They came out onto an open path that led from the chapel's highest floor toward an old spire that Edgar had never known existed, let alone stepped foot inside. As they crossed the bridge, no rail to protect them from the dozen-meter drop below, Edgar clutched his robes down against the gusting wind. "But where did the blood come from?" he asked, trying to distract himself from the long drop below. "That is what you shall learn today," said Yuri. They reached the spire, and Yuri led them through a heavy oak door into its interior, where a spiral stair led up and up, several floors to even greater heights. "The place we go now is of the most sacred kind," Yuri explained, her breath unimpeded as they circled upward. "You see, after those first sojourns into the tombs, the prospectors returned many times to bring relics, both holy and strange, and some that are heretical." She turned slightly over her shoulder then, and though Edgar could not see her eyes, he well understood the sharp look she intended to fix him with. "Which we have no cause to speak of now." "Yes, ma'am," Edgar said obediently. Yuri turned forward again. "It was deep within the labyrinth where we discovered her." Edgar shivered. He had only the faintest inkling of what she was referring to, but his nerves and capillaries seemed to tingle all the same, as if heightened by pure animal instinct. "Do you see, Edgar?" Yuri said as they climbed. "Those of us descended from Bergenworth have understood for generations that the gods, omnipotent and grand as they may be, live closer to us than we could have dared to hope." She spread her hands before her eagerly. "They are unknowable, and they are infinite, and yet they are attentive. They are eager to share with us their boons, their secrets, and their love." They approached the uppermost level. Yuri pulled yet another key from her sleeve, nodding to a very old, wheelchair-bound man who sat watching the stairs at their summit. He nodded back in acknowledgement, and Yuri led Edgar to a wooden door. Thus, deep within the tomb, Lawrence, mightiest of priests, discovered the one whom we call Daughter of the Cosmos, a poor lost lamb of unfathomable mothers. Why she was abandoned there, we do not know, but her song writhed through the labyrinth and called Lawrence and his disciples to her. Yuri unlocked the door with splendid ceremony in her movements. There they were joined in the most joyous of ceremonies, blessed by heaven and earth. Those were the first members of the choir. The door swung open, and Edgar was granted his first view of the handsome lofts that he would soon call home. Great spires stretched upward into the clouds, trees impossibly tall, stretching their crooked branches upward in supplication. Old stone and wrought iron gates, each intricately carved and soldered with care. Edgar stepped forward to the curved rail and marveled at the sight, all his fears over the altitude gone. Yuri stepped up behind him, and she pressed her gloved hand to his back. He stood up straighter, beneath her prodding, and together they continued on. "Here is where the choir conducts its holy work," she said. "It is home to you now." Edgar nodded, swelling with pride.
"And her?"
Yuri nodded. "We brought her here to slumber beneath this great cathedral so that we may pay her proper worship," she said, pointing to the domes and pillars of the grand cathedral to the north, "to offer her comfort and hope and gain her favor in return. Thus, we have been blessed by cooperation for a generation. As we have grown closer to her, she has grown closer to us, and bestowed upon her many times her holy blood for communion."
"Am I truly to meet such a divine creature?" asked Edgar, lightheaded with the efforts of his own imagination.
"You are indeed," said Yuri, as they crossed another bridge, this one broader, sturdier, and well guarded on both sides by tall stone rails. "I know you will be ready."
Edgar glanced over the edge, to where Yharnam proper glistened like a rare ore in the light. The roar of the wind at their height gave him a chill.
"What about the beasts?" he asked.
Ahead of him, Yuri's posture grew stricter.
"What about them?"
"I thought it was understood that it was not until after the formation of the Healing Church that the beasts..."
"The beasts are not your concern," Yuri cut him off coldly, and Edgar clapped his jaws shut.
"In the early days, when these fiends first appeared, it was the sacred duty of the hunters. Now that those hunters have gone, it falls to us, the Healing Church."
She scoffed quietly.
"Or at least to our lower echelons. It is they who safeguard the citizens of Yharnam from the wholly unconnected menace."
Yuri paused then, as if realizing then how her manners had changed. She cleared her throat and resumed a calmer tone.
"But you needn't worry yourself on that. You are a hunter no longer. Your station rests high above them. A talent such as yours can be put to better use than in the slaying of mongrel dogs."
"Yes, ma'am," said Edgar, embarrassed by having spoken out of turn and earning her wrath. "If I may ask, what use is that?"
"It has reached the ears of the choir that the school of Mensis is at work on a heretical ritual," said Yuri, and Edgar bristled in outrage at the mere mention of such heresy. "They have no respect for the old gods. They think of them as simple playthings, baubles for them to inspect and abuse. Past Hyopgian Gael, deep in the valleys, beyond the city, they dedicate themselves to their mad work. Their disrespect knows no bounds, and they must be punished for their impudence."
Edgar clenched his fists at his sides.
"What is it they hope to accomplish?"
"That we do not know, but their methods are ungodly. They wallow in the bodies of the dead and damned." Again, Yuri's temper rose to the surface in scathing disgust. Their master, Mikolash, claims he seeks enlightenment as we do, but he is a madman seeking only power for himself. He will never make contact with the old gods. They reached the edge of the bridge, and Edgar turned his gaze upward to the great stone building that was their goal. An immense iron gate stood in their path, looming grandly over them. As they climbed the steps, it swung open with a squeal of metal. The sound sent a chill up Edgar's spine, but his gait did not falter. "To ensure that he does not, we call upon you, Edgar," said Yuri, and once within the gate, she stopped and turned toward him. The marble floors were polished to such a mirror sheen that it reflected her regal figure as she fixed him with her full attention. "We shall send you out against this fiend so that you may uncover his secrets and expose his misdeeds to Yharnam's judgment," she declared. "Will you do this for me?" "Yes, my lady," Edgar replied immediately. "Of course I will." Yuri smiled at him, her rouged lips full and sweet, stoking his loyalty. "Of course you will." Ever onward, she guided him, down a narrow corridor toward an open and waiting door. "This is a great favor you do for us, Edgar. Before we can send you out against the night, you must be accepted into our order as one of us. Are you prepared for this?" Edgar could not remember a day in his life where he would have even considered rejecting an offer from the church. "Yes, ma'am." They entered a side room where a man and woman in white choir garb awaited them. Placed within the small room was a washing tub and basins of water and clean rags on either side. Edgar stepped inside without fear, though he did startle when the pair began divesting him of his robes. One plucked the glasses from his nose, turning his surroundings into a brown and gray blue. He dared not complain. Even as he was stripped entirely nude, he did not question or protest. "To join the choir is not merely to don our garb and take up our cause," said Yuri as her two assistants guided Edgar to stand in the basin. "You must commit yourself fully in body and in spirit to the salvation of our people, to the evolution of humanity, and the commitment to all-powerful truths." Edgar heard dripping water, and he flinched as a cool, damp rag was dragged down his back. He kept his mouth stoically shut as the pair went about scrubbing him down, chest and stomach, arms and legs, face and genitals. They purified every part of him. "You must devote yourself to the gods, and they, in turn, must accept you," Yuri continued as they worked. "Do you understand?" Yes, said Edgar, keeping his chin up as one of them. He could not tell if it was the man or woman, scrubbed between his buttocks. "I understand." "For this, you must be introduced to our lovely patron. Only she among us has the right to judge you, to lay bare your soul and know your commitment. You are prepared?" Edgar swallowed. "I am." "Good." The pair each took one of his hands and helped him out of the basin. He waited for one of them to offer him his choir robes in replacement, but instead, Yuri turned and left the room with an unhurried determination that indicated he was meant to follow. Swallowing, Edgar did so, reminding himself that their blindfold caps would safeguard his modesty. Out in the hall, a fourth choir member awaited them. He fell into step behind Edgar, and with Yuri ahead and the bathing pair on either side, the four herded him down another long corridor and up stairs. He was grateful to them for remaining close, blocking his body from any potential eyes. The soft linen of their robes brushed, tantalizing against his naked skin as they marched on.
They passed into an adjoining building, where they crossed a tall mezzanine over an immense chamber below. The soft candlelight and intricate ceiling carvings, the echo of prayers from below, were so familiar to Edgar that he gasped softly in recognition. They were passing over the main hall of the Grand Cathedral. He blushed at the thought of the worshippers that may be below, offering their humble prayers while he paraded by above their heads in his nakedness. Once they reached the far end of the upper hall, the three choir members stood back, allowing Yuri to lead her charge alone into the center of another stone lift, where they stood facing each other. And as Yuri engaged the central mechanism, she clasped Edgar's hands in hers. "Edgar, I believe in you," she said, with such warm tenderness that loyal euphoria flowed all through him. "You must, in return, believe in yourself. Once we get to the bottom, I will not be able to accompany you. This is your task alone. Do you understand?" "Yes," said Edgar. He would have done anything for her then. Yuri removed the blue ribbon that adorned the collar of her garb and tied it around Edgar's eyes in a blindfold. He did not resist. "She is not yet for your eyes," she said quietly. "Keep this about your eyes. Your sanity depends on it." "I understand." The lift groaned to a stop. With his eyes blindfolded, Edgar focused intensely on the sounds around them. A hollow breeze whistling through the stone, the chill kiss of cave moisture, the distant sloshing of hollow water. He allowed Yuri to tug him off the lift, his bare feet cold against moist stone. "You will step forward into her abode and keep going," said Yuri. "You will know when to stop. She will see all of you, every thought you have ever held, and every future you may behold." She moved around behind him, her gloved hands gentle against his waist. He took a step forward into ankle-deep water. "Do not be afraid and feel no shame, for her judgment is kind. You will not be able to hide anything from her, so do not try. Do you understand?" "Yes," Edgar breathed, every hair on his body standing on end. Yuri leaned closer. Her breath was hot against the back of his neck. "She will touch you in ways you find most intimate," she whispered. "There is no cause for shame. Do you understand?" Edgar shivered all over. "Yes." "Very good." Yuri stepped back, and she pushed gently on his back to spur him on. "When you are finished, I will collect you. Do not be afraid." Edgar swallowed, and with a deep breath, he stepped forward. The cold water sloshed against his ankles, sending goosebumps rippling up his naked legs. As he continued forward, alone, he became slowly aware of just how large the empty space around him was. Each tiny drip echoed, making him feel very small, insignificant even. He did not detect any other living thing nearby. No stirring of breath or movement. So he continued forward, prickling with excitement and dread in equal measure, his every sense almost painfully attuned. Water sloshed and Edgar stopped. He felt a wave against his shins, large enough to indicate something of incredible size moving about in front of him. Slithery, wet sounds tickled his ears, sent his heart racing. Something was coming toward him. The very air seemed to cower back from what was doubtlessly a towering mass. Instinct shuddered all through his frail human frame, rattling his knees with the command to flee. Edgar thought of Yuri's delicate hand poised at his back and held his ground. Was he meant to greet it, to bow, to kneel? Edgar strained his memory for the training he had received when first being presented with the honor of joining the choir. The pool churned around his ankles, distracting him. He could feel the presence approaching. His skin prickled as if being teased by tiny bolts of lightning. At last, he remembered. He lifted one arm straight above him, the other out to his side. "Let the heavens be upon earth," he whispered, Yuri's steady voice in his ear encouraging him. "Let us of earth be among the heavens." Something touched the center of his upstretched palm. Edgar gasped and just barely managed not to flinch away. It was warm, smooth, wet. It trailed down from his hand to the delicate softness of the inside of his forearm, leaving a trail of viscous ooze in its wake. Edgar shivered but remained steady as the unidentifiable appendage followed his arm to elbow, to shoulder, where it rested. Another touch graced his other hand, and in like fashion traced his arm to his torso. It was much closer now. She was much closer now, Edgar recalled. He could hear her limbs sliding against each other with wet slaps of moist flesh, somewhere far above his head. Her manners were slow and curious, he imagined, or at the very least, not displeased. Another appendage prodded at him, and then another, feeling out his chest, back, stomach, legs. Edgar breathed in and out, in and out, trying to remain calm. Yuri had told him not to be afraid, and he was determined to follow her commands. The creature would accept him, if only he was sure and patient and pure. The wriggling appendages continued their explorations. Edgar's pulse hitched as they slithered around his throat, teased his armpits, and finally, between his legs. Edgar tried to press his lips tight as she shamelessly prodded his exposed sex. But even so, a tiny whimper slipped from him. If this offended her, she gave no indication, and instead seemed emboldened by it. One of her many tendrils continued upward, stroking between his thighs and buttocks. Edgar tensed all over, the slow, unyielding caress drawing an unexpected heat into his stomach that tasted suspiciously, shamefully, like arousal. "Let heaven," Edgar whispered, but then he gasped as the daughter of the cosmos wrapped him up. She lifted him into the air. Edgar shook, abandoning his pose in a moment of panic to push at the thick, slimy tentacles. Blinded as he was, the world seemed to tilt and spin around him, and he couldn't be sure just how high he was being carried. He could sense the hulking form of the goddess ahead of him, and just when he thought his wits would flee from him, he saw something within his mind. The blackness behind the blindfold reminded him of a moonless night sky, as his heavenly patron soothed him with melty caresses. He could see pinpoints of light flashing across his eyes like shooting stars. They blossomed into reeling colors, as if he were moving through the cosmos at incredible speed, past whirling planets and brilliant suns, deeper and deeper into an endless expanse. As each blinding point wheeled past, he saw flashes of his life, his childhood among the church ward districts, dancing in and out of alleyways, playing at being a hunter, his beautiful and charming sister, whisked away to serve as a blood saint for their beloved vicar, his first loves, his first heartaches. His every memory unfolded before him like pages in a book that had been torn from the spine and cast into the void. How pale they seemed, how utterly trivial when compared to the majesty of infinity. But no, as Edgar's history spun about him like a child's plaything, as weightless and helpless as he felt within the daughter's arms, He realized all at once that these shorn pages that comprised him were on display. The unfathomable child of an ephemeral universe was partaking of him, eagerly reading each chapter of his short lifetime as a scholar might dedicate herself to his tomes, or a young maiden might squirrel away a romantic serial. He was a story she wished to know, and she drank of him fully. As she drew him closer, he felt new wonders of her anatomy welcoming him, thick, squirming tendrils that wriggled and sucked at his clean skin. Every inch of his eager body was enveloped in her curious molestation, and every inch rejoiced in it. From his curling toes to his blushing cheeks, from his throat to his pelvis, his heart raced and his skin shivered, and he felt then that she worshipped him as he did her. She wanted to see and feel every part of him, and he ached to expose each for her delectation. And he saw her too. As moon and stars careened overhead, he saw in them her life, eons of incomprehensible existence compressed into a fine point that pierced his bosom in its profound simplicity. He felt her joy at her birth, swaddled in moonbeams. He felt her despair as she lay abandoned beneath the earth in cold labyrinths of stone. He rejoiced at her discovery within the caves and her fascination with the tiny, frail creatures of pink flesh that coaxed her from it. He saw, through her many eyes, first Vicar Lawrence and his beloved acolytes offering themselves to her. He felt, through her beating heart, the scintillating rituals they had engaged in. She loved them, and she loved him, and he loved her, and his human organs were so crude and base that they could respond only with instinctual arousal. Edgar ought to have burned with shame, he thought distantly. But there was no humiliation to be found here, as the daughter of the cosmos showered him with her adoration, tickling and fondling his every tender crevice. His heart beat more savagely, and his breath rushed in and out of his heaving lungs, and heat and pleasure coursed through every muscle and sinew. She was perfection, and he was nothing, and her acceptance of him lifted him to the heights of ecstasy. He shook and writhed and moaned aloud, all human thought and language lost to him. She whispered her name in his ear, and he surrendered all composure, his cries of joy echoing through the cave in a climax of otherworldly raptures. She laid him down in the water. Edgar drifted atop the shallow pool, drained of all strength, tears soaking his blindfold. He felt weightless and alone, but not nearly so small. When a gentle human hand fell upon his chest, he took a breath for what felt like the first time in hours. "Edgar," Yuri said quietly, her voice beaming with pride. "You've done very well, and you are one of us now. Do you understand?" "Yes," Edgar breathed. Even through the blindfold, he could see her and know her, the world having cracked up on to shower him with its secrets. He could not wait to begin. "I understand everything now." "Very good. Then rise and do our bidding." And Edgar did. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback both for myself and for the author. You can find the podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening. Reader's notes. This fic was originally written for me for Yuletide 2021 as a Yuletide treat. And gosh, I opened it the very, very first time on Christmas Day and just saw the notes. I didn't have that much time at the time when I opened it to actually read it, but I read the author's notes and it says, I saw your letter prompt for lore primer and tentacle porn, and I'm pretty sure they were not intended to go together, but here they are anyway. And I laughed about it for pretty much the entire day. I spent, like, just randomly throughout Christmas Day, I would remember that and just so much grinning. And I think I posted to, like, every single person that would listen, like, look at this fantastic, fantastic, like, author's notes. Like, even if the fic is terrible, I will forever adore it for somebody seeing those two things and writing me something because it is so very me. And then I finally, I think near the end of the day or maybe the next day, finally read the fic, and it's glorious, just poetic and exactly the lore dump and the tentacle porn, like it, oh, it's perfect. And then I, when authors revealed, I clicked through and Crook has blanket permission. So yeah, obviously tentacle porn and lore primer was getting a podfic, obviously. The other fun thing that happened with this podfic is the fact that I first recorded it yesterday. And if you're like, why are you recording the reader's notes on a different day? That's because at the end of my recording, and it gets very poetic at the end and builds and builds and builds, and I was super happy with it. I said the end, I glanced over at my microphone, and it was not recording. And just despair, all of the despair. And then because it has been a very long time since I have forgotten to hit record, and I could have sworn that it was recording. So I stopped podficking, even though I had other plans for podficking that day. And then I went to work and was organizing all of the podfic that over the break I had recorded and finally gotten off my microphone. And turns out I did record most of it. I have a feeling that the memory card in my microphone was full and so it just stopped recording. All except for like the final like 5 minutes. So yeah, that's why I'm hoping that it'll blend together fairly seamlessly, but just in case it doesn't, that's why suddenly 5 minutes later, it sounds ever so slightly like the momentum is different or something. So yeah, anyway, good in the end, I didn't lose the entire thing.